Committee on Senate File 2390 will come to order. First, why don't we have people go around the table and introduce themselves? Do you want to start, Emily?
Sure. I'm Molly Richardson, and I have DFL research.
Hi, I'm Pete Boyevich. I am Representative Bernardi's Legislative System.
Ryan Winkler, State House.
Jim Gelman, Committee Administrator for the House Elections Committee.
Matt Garing from Nonpartisan House Research.
Connie Bernardi, Minnesota House. Katie Steven, the Senate.
Jen Bromlett, I'm the election CA in the Senate.
Janice Tweet, I'm Senator Stevens, Legislative Assistant.
Alexis Dangle, Senate Counsel.
Scott Newman, Minnesota Senate.
John Hopkins, Senate.
Craig Janicich, Senate DFL Research.
Craig Sunday, Senate Republican Research.
Brennan.
Brennan Meyer, I'm Senate Age.
Emily is Truman, the House Age.
Why don't we just keep going? If you don't mind.
Sheila Vanney, I'm the Assistant Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation.
Beth Fraser, Deputy Secretary. Julie Strother, Secretary of State.
Anne Lindstrom, Lake Minnesota State.
Angela Tool, Ramsey County Elections.
Andrea Rowe, Kewaukee. Great. So what we're going to do, members, is ask Council Lexi Stengel to go through the and move and suggest a motion to adopt the like provisions that are in both the House and Senate versions of the bill. That's okay. So Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you prefer the numbers in the House sections or the Senate sections?
So if we're going through this, everybody has this side by side in their folder. So why don't you just, I don't know, the best way, whatever you think is easiest for us to follow.
Okay. If you're looking at the side-by-side summary, sections 1 and 2 of the Senate are the same as sections 4 and 5 of the House. In the next page, Senate Section 3 and Senate Section 6. Sorry, Senate Section 3, House Section 6. Skipping to page 3 of the summary.
Sorry, can you slow down a little bit?
Yes, okay. I'll start back at the beginning on page 1 of the side-by-side summary. Senate Section 1 and House Section 4 are the same. Do you want any summaries of what these are, or just keep
No, since they're the same, I think, unless anyone has any questions.
She said Section 1 and Section 4, right? Mm-hmm.
She said here Section 4.
Okay, Senate Bill and Section 4, that
okay, gotcha.
And then Section 2 of the Senate Bill, Section 5 of the House Bill. On the next page, Section 3 of the Senate.
Okay.
On page 2, Senate Section 3 and House Section 6. Then we have several provisions that we'll come back to because they're not the same. So we'll move to page 3 of the summary. Senate Section 6, Senate Section 7, which is also House Section 7. Senate and House Sections 8, Senate and House Sections 9, 10, and 11. It finishes up page 3. Then we skip a section we'll come back to later. Senate Section 12, House Section 13 are the same. Senate Section 13, House Section 14. Senate Section 14, House Section 15. Senate Section 15, House Section 16. Senate Section 16, and House Section 17. Senate Section 17, House Section 18. Senate Section 18, House Section 19. Brings us to page 5. Senate Section 19, House Section 20. Senate Section 20, House Section 21. We skip a section that we'll come back to. Senate Section 22 and House Section 22. Senate and House Sections 23. And that is the end of the same. Section 24 is similar and
explain what you recommend.
I spoke with Mr. Gehring at House Research and would recommend Senate Section 24.
So, Representative Bernardi moved the sections that Ms. Stengel just mentioned. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. So now we'll go back to the beginning of the spreadsheet, and should we just start at the top? We could start at, you'll see that in section one of the House bill, there's a cross-reference, or maybe Ms. Stengel should explain it, cross-reference to the Safe at Home program.
If it's all right with you, Madam Chair, I'll defer to Matt Gehring on the first three sections since they're all House provisions.
Oh, great. Okay, Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, so section one is a Safe at Home provision. It's updating a cross-reference to the absentee ballot processing procedures that current law is a erroneous reference to the UOCAVA process, and so this is updating the reference to the sort of standard absentee balloting process, which is what is used currently.
And does anyone know on our side why that wasn't included in our bill?
Madam Chair, it wasn't included in, we didn't have a Senate file bill or amendment. I believe the House adopted that on the floor.
It was an amendment on the floor?
Yes.
And is there anyone in the audience that wants to speak to this or feels like it's wants to discuss it?
I'm happy to explain it or answer any questions, but don't feel like need to.
Well then, Representative Bernardi moves the House language for section one. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. So section two. Mr. Gehring?
So, Madam Chair, Section 2 is a provision that's authored and built by Representative Rick Hansen. This is a provision that requires soil and water conservation districts in the metro area to be elected by a supervisory district. I believe it's currently the case that two counties in the metro area elect by district and the rest of them don't. And so this would conform all the metro counties to the district model.
And by way of reference, we did have a bill I carried a similar provision in the Senate Congress, if you recall. We heard it in our subcommittee, and then it just kind of ran out of time in the Rules Committee. Got a little held up, but Senator Hoffman.
Yeah, Mr. Madam Chair, is there a cost? Is there a cost to this? Or a cost to change?
It would be minimal.
Because there's quite a difference. When you take a small, like Dakota County, I think the largest is 100,000, 110,000. And the smallest is like 210 to 3640. And part of what this is to make it part of the county commissioner structure. All of a sudden, you're gonna be running a pretty larger race than you were when you were living out in a small area. So does anybody look at the cost effectiveness of that? It's just a question.
Mr. Gehring, was there a fiscal note on the bill?
Madam Chair, I guess I don't recall there being a fiscal note. I think in committee there was discussion that it would be just sort of a minimal cost because they're just, what this would require is basically redistricting of the county supervisor districts.
No state cost, the local government cost. It's a local government cost, there's no state cost.
Madam Chair, so Mr. Geldman has informed me that there was a local cost indicated but not a state cost.
There's not a state cost, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Because really it's just, if I recall correctly too, it's just redistricting the district.
Yeah, that's right.
It's reforming the district to more accurately reflect the population.
Correct.
Is there anyone in the audience who, I assume that you would like to testify to this section?
Yes,
please
Madam
state
Chair.
Your name for the conference committee.
Sheila Vanney, I'm the Assistant Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And we are opposed to this provision of the bill. We've testified earlier in session regarding this provision. Basically, in 2003, well, prior to 2003, the way the statute read, Ramsey and Washington counties and the Soil and Water Conservation Districts in those counties had this as an option. In 2003, through our association's legislative initiative, we opened that up to be an option to any SWCD. If they felt they could better serve their clientele and the public that they serve through a different process of elections, then they had that option. And since then, Washington Conservation District has voluntarily embarked on being elected by supervisor districts. They have to be based on population, so they are generally on county commissioner boundaries. The rest of the SWCDs act on this pretty much biannually at the beginning of an election cycle. So you'd probably December, January, February, the other 89 soil and water conservation districts have this on their board agendas. They discuss the way that they're currently elected, which is that they are all elected countywide. Their nomination districts are distributed geographically across the county to provide a geographic distribution of the interests and perspectives of soil and water issues that the county that the SWCD addresses. And so every voter in the county has an opportunity to vote for every soil and water district supervisor in most cases. Mr. Gehring referenced two SWCDs. Actually, the second is Hennepin County, which is now serving in the capacity of a soil and water conservation district. So an SWCD no longer technically exists there. The county commissioners are serving in that capacity because of special legislation last session. But Washington Conservation District is the only district that's voluntarily embarked on this. And if you look at the population distribution of Washington County, it generally does line up with the geographic distribution. So it hasn't been as stark a transition for them as it might be in other counties where the majority of the population is centered in one part of the county or another.
And Ms. Vanney, isn't it accurate to say that, especially in places like Dakota County, where there is a concentration of the population in the northern part of the county, there are supervisors who represent in excess of, I don't have the chart in front of me, but like 100,000 people versus the, even supervisor District 1, 210,000 people versus District 5 that supervisor only represents 3,000 people. And I understand that you said it's based on, the districts are drawn based on geography, but what about just the premise of like one person, one vote?
Every SWCD supervisor on an SWCD board represents every citizen in the county. Those nomination districts are just that. They're self-nomination districts. So an individual needs to reside in that part of the county to provide a perspective of the land and water resources in that part of the county. But they don't solely represent the voters in that nomination district. They represent the voters countywide.
Any discussion from the committee? Questions from Ms. Vanney?
Madam Chair, I can make an observation that when I look at this sheet, and, you know, the issue of one person, one vote, it really does seem lopsided. Seems to me that if you were nominated and elected by a particular district, that's the district that contains your constituents. I'm more than willing to go with whatever the chair wants to decision. Those would be my observations. And I did have a visit with Representative Hansen about this before we came on.
That's what I was going to say is, although he is not one of my House members, we both represent South St. Paul, and he feels very strongly about this provision.
Yes,
Representative Bernardi moves the House language on section 2. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you for your consideration, Madam Chair.
Thank
committee
you.
Members.
Mr. Gearing, section 3.
So, Madam Chair, section 3 is an amendment to the vouching provisions. This section amends the form of the oath and the form that's actually used for vouching purposes to reflect that not all vouchers are registered voters in the precinct. There's also the option for an employee of a residential facility in the precinct to vouch for someone. And so this section amends the form of the language on the vouching form to reflect that reality.
So, members, I was just talking to Senator Newman. The reason that this was originally in our version of the bill that passed off, passed through committee and came to the Senate floor, then Senator Kiffmeyer expressed concern to me that she wanted the people who are able to vouch for residents of care facilities to only be residents of border states. And so I indicated to her that this was going to be discussed, that it would likely be discussed in the conference committee, and if she had a solution to bring me language. And maybe Craig knows something here. And I talked to her about it on the floor today, but I haven't gotten anything.
I just received the language and got a recommendation, and Alexi is trying to look gross. But effectively, it would say that the employee in a residential facility in the precinct who resides in a state with contiguous border.
Ms. Stengel, should we set this aside for a minute so you have a chance to?
I think I've got it. So the language would be, I'm looking at the side-by-side language on page R3 on the House side, line 3.34. After the word precinct, insert who resides in a state with a contiguous border.
Of Minnesota. Just clarify that they would also obviously be eligible.
Yes, Madam Chair, the way I read that is the way I read that now would be that you are either registered to vote in that precinct or a residing state, but if you were, say, from a neighboring precinct, this wouldn't cover you. So I think
Could we amend your amendment to say
yes.
Who resides in Minnesota or in a?
Yes.
Mr. Gearing?
Oh, Madam Chair, just to clarify, I think the language that you're amending is the language of the form, not the substance of the vouching requirement, which is up on 3.22. So I think you need to amend it in both places. Because 3.33 is the form that has to be, is the form of the oath. 3.22 is the actual substance.
So, Ms. Stengel, do you want to incorporate that into your amendment?
Yes.
Or read what it would say on 3.22?
Yes. Okay. On 3.22, after the word precinct, insert who resides in Minnesota or a state with a contiguous border. And again on line 3.34 after precinct, insert who resides in Minnesota or a state with a contiguous border.
On that amendment, is there anyone in our Senator Hoffman?
This is, I know of residential facilities that provide services to people with traumatic brain injury. The individuals work in Bloomington, Fridley, and they live across the river in Wisconsin, and the house manager is somebody who doesn't live in the state. All they're doing is vouching at the individual that lives in the facility. And if I misunderstand this, please correct me, but they're vouching that the individual actually lives in that facility or lives in the precinct. So I think you're going to have the same problem in places like Moorhead and East.
Right, and I think the language, what the language is hoping to, the change was to clarify that, the change was to clarify that you could be a resident of another state, but still vouch for a resident of that particular facility. And Senator Kiffmeyer's point was you shouldn't be able to have someone vouch for a resident if they're from Florida or a non-contiguous state, but that if they, she felt more comfortable with it if they were from a contiguous state, that then, so in what her language would do would narrow it from you could be from anywhere in the country down to you could vouch for residents of care facilities if you're from Minnesota or a contiguous state. I don't know if anyone thought about, or, well, you can't vouch for someone if you're from Canada, can you? Right now in your current law. Well, obviously not.
Well, just as if you're not a contiguous state.
If you're not a contiguous state. Well, under this plan, under, right. So, discussion on this amendment.
Well,
Representative Winkler.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to make clear that we're taking something that is conforming an oath to current policy and instead changing the policy. And I'm not sure that's within quite within the scope of what we were talking about originally, but maybe the Secretary of State's office can clarify.
Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And the form actually with the current language, with the language, with the House language, the form would not need to be changed. Since employees of residential facilities have been allowed to vouch for residents of those facilities, the form adopted by the former Secretary of State and continued under Secretary Ritchie has had people swear that they are employees. And so this, we're actually making a technical change to the law to ensure that that is fully in alignment. And so if we add additional qualifications, we're going to have to change the form, which would be a major expense for local election officials since a lot of them are planning on using forms from previous years in this fall's election. So, I mean, I think the understanding, or a lot of people's understanding has always been that if you were an employee, you could vouch, and that's the way the form has always read. There's some confusion because this implies that you had to have been eligible to vote and an employee. And so this language just clarifies, it gets rid of any confusion and makes sure that the law is applied uniformly across the state.
So, Ms. Frazier, could you clarify what you were attempting to clarify then in the House provision that passed off the House, the House language?
Yes, Madam Chair. So the language on 3.21 says having a voter who is registered to vote in the precinct or who is an employee, and who is modifying voter, which implies that the employee has to be eligible to vote, which causes problems if your employees, for example, are from Wisconsin. And so striking the words who is and making the changes later in that subdivision make it clear that as long as you are an employee of a facility, that suffices for vouching. And that's, I think, the understanding in the office when the form was originally adopted under Secretary Kiffmeyer and the way that the form has continued. And so it's just trying to clarify and make sure there's uniform enforcement across the state.
But then in the 3.33 and 3.34, you're changing the form itself under the House language?
Madam Chair, this actually would bring the form that has always been used and the statute into alignment with one another.
So you're not changing the form under the House language?
That's right, Madam Chair.
And your testimony is that if we adopted Senator Kiffmeyer's suggestion, that then you'd have to change the form?
Yes, Madam Chair.
I don't really understand why. So the form, Ms. Frazier, says that you have to be, what does the form say? Or how does it verify, what does it verify now that you're a voter, a registered voter?
Madam Chair.
You have to change that anyway then, though, I assume, if you're going
No.
To clarify that they have to be a resident.
And I'm trying to get copies of the form brought here. They're not here yet, apparently, obviously. But the form right now says I, and you fill in your name. It says swear I am. And then either you check a box that says a registered voter in this precinct, or you check a box that says an employee at a residential facility, and you fill in the name of the facility. It says, and I personally know that voter, and then you fill in the person's name, is a resident of this precinct and lives at, and you fill in the address.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I think we have, here, this. No, they have a form. It's not totally consistent with what the state statute probably says, but they've been using that form for a long time, so they're trying to change the statute to fit the form. If we adopt the Kiffmeyer suggestion, we have to change the form to fit the statute. And so in my mind, we could either, the two choices would be to just drop this house provision entirely and go on the way we've been living for years with no harm being done, or we have to get into a question of whether we want to change the form language and not adopt the Kiffmeyer provision. So I guess I would leave that to those who are maybe representing the views of Senator Kiffmeyer.
I guess after listening to the discussion and listening to Ms. Frazier, it sounds to me like what they're simply trying to do is correct an error in process rather than change the substantive of the statute. And like Senator Hoffman just whispered in my ear while Representative Winkler and you were talking, it's pretty unlikely you'd have someone living in the state of Florida and working at a nursing home in Moorhead. So with that explanation, my suggestion is that we simply write the House language and maybe down there.
Okay, so Representative Bernardi moves the House language. He's going to withdraw the amendment. No. So then, so Representative Bernardi moves the language on the House Section 3. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. So then it looks like we're moving to Section 4 of the Senate language. Is that right, Ms. Campbell?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Clarify or explain what it does.
Yes, Madam Chair. There are Senate Sections 4, 5, and 6, which start on Reviser page 5 of the side-by-side, all go together. And these three sections, and I'll go through them one at a time after I make the sort of general statement, have to do with when the names of absentee voters become public. So Section 4 of the Senate language, which is on R5, just makes a conforming change to the changes we'll talk about in the next section. And I'm talking about these as a group because they need to go as a group instead of voting on them one at a time, if that's all right with you, Madam Chair.
Yep.
Section 5 starts at the very bottom of Reviser 5, but the language is actually on Reviser 6. And this changes the statute about when names can be released. This section now prohibits election officials from making public the names of voters who have had their ballots rejected. And under current law, it's any absentee ballot, so we're limiting whose name can be released. And Section 6 is really the meat of what these three sections are trying to do. And this would allow the names of people who have had their absentee ballots accepted to be made public in the same manner as the other voter lists that are made public prior to the end of the election day. And the Secretary of State must maintain a list of those voters with absentee ballots that have been accepted for statewide elections. In the local elections, the local jurisdictions would have to maintain that list.
Is there any discussion on these provisions? They weren't controversial in the Senate, and if the House is willing,
should we? It seems to me that there's some that should we go through the other ones, the same thing, or you're not going to adopt it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So then
that's fine.
Okay. So Representative Bernardi moves the language on the Senate language for sections 4, 5, and 6. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Then we already did all of page 3 on the spreadsheet. Okay, so page 4, then, it's a House provision, it looks like, Mr. Gearing, section 12.
So, Madam Chair, this is an update to the text of the Voters' Bill of Rights. It clarifies that the right to be absent from work for the purpose of voting applies to state and federal elections only. So this is just, and because the Voters' Bill of Rights is just the sort of the form of the Bill of Rights and not the underlying substance of the right to be absent from work, so it's not changing any policy. It's just updating the text of the Bill of Rights.
And members, again, Senator Kiffmeyer and I had a discussion about this provision prior to the bill coming up on the floor. She, if I can paraphrase what she told me, she was concerned that originally she thought that the Bill of Rights applied to all, including local elections, so that employees could take time off of work to vote in school district or city elections. And she wanted to change the provision to that. And I said that I was uncomfortable doing that sort of on the fly, on the floor of the Senate, because that's a more substantial change than just changing the Voters' Bill of Rights to more accurately reflect what the law says. And so I think that and I told her that we could have a hearing on it next year, discuss this issue next year, but I feel pretty comfortable that we could adopt this provision, although I didn't talk to her about it today again, but I'm comfortable adopting this provision if my other conferees are. It just, again, clarifies the Voter Bill of Rights that really states that that applies for state and federal elections and not for local elections. And then again, to be clear, that other policy discussion about whether the Voters' Bill of Rights should apply to city and school district elections is a more substantial change that we could discuss at a later time. So with that, Representative Bernardi moves section 12 of the House language. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. Then it looks like the next provision is Senate Section 21. Ms. Stengel?
Yes, Madam Chair. You will see Section 21 on Reviser page 13. And towards the end of both the House and Senate file, there's a whole series of sections where we're updating the form of a question. And this just adds an additional question. It's similar to the other sections around it. This particular question that's not included in the House language has to do with when a county changes borders or a new county is created. It doesn't change any of the substance. It just sort of updates how the question will be asked on the ballot.
Anybody? Is there anybody who would like to speak to this? It's on page R14. Section 21, or moves that we adopt the Senate language of Section 21. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Then it looks like Section 25 of the House and Section 26. Mr. Gearing, do you want to describe that?
Madam Chair, House Section 25 is a repealer. This repeals Section 201-016 Subdivision 2, which is language that allows local jurisdictions to establish additional residency requirements for voters who want to vote in a local-only election. And my understanding is that this subdivision created an issue in the city of Coates that maybe the Secretary of State can clarify, but the current process isn't workable with, you know, with the allowance for locals to set separate residency requirements because everything is voted on a single ballot.
Mr. Giulio, did you want to speak to this?
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nick DiGiulio. I'm with the Minnesota Association of County Officers, also known as MACO. We represent the auditors, treasurers, auditors, and recorders for all 87 counties. And this is something that we brought forward to the House when the bill was up on the floor. And Section 25 of the House language, the language would repeal Subdivision 2 of Statute 201.016. And we feel its deletion is kind of in line with the uncession. This subdivision is a little bit of a holdover from last year's technical bill, where we kind of eliminated some of the previous colored ballot systems. And the subdivision would allow for school districts, townships, or cities that are only one precinct larger to establish different residency requirements by voters, for voters by imposing longer residency requirements. While different residency requirements may have been possible during the time when Minnesota used different color ballots for different jurisdictions, we feel that under elections, federal, state, county, city, school district, the current balloting systems, registration systems, and absentee ballot processing systems cannot accommodate the different residency requirements. So we'd ask for your support in the House language.
But there's a roll call which you want to go do. So I'll... Representative Bernardi moved the language and on sections 25 and 26. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
So that's adopted. And members, if you don't mind, we'll just go vote and be right back.
Is there anything else?
Yes. Just give a chance to read before it's transmitted. Just consider that. Yes, so you pass it over. Just give them a chance to look at the email.
Yeah.
finish the calendar.
Okay, so we would be adopting the committee.
I think when I left, Mahoney was doing a proclamation for a while, so I figured that was a good time to leave. So we had just finished the calendar before that, but I heard that they were going to make me some reports.
Also, I can give an update.
Oh, yeah.
A good time. Good time to ask that question because I haven't always asked when it would be fun.
This is a lot better. It's okay. I just found it's a problem that you open my
government operations.
So what, Pete, what's your best guess to tell me about being here?
This weekend sometime.
I don't think it's going to be too late. My daughter's having her friends over for her graduation from college party today. And so I want to like come home and be the hostess.
Well, the chief is Heidi. It's an informational
Did you guys hear what happened in my district last week?
Yeah.
A neighbor shot another neighbor and killed him?
Because one was eating beer or something.
That's, you know, you're putting the pieces together. I went over there this morning because that's where I jog and walk. And I turned like a half a street, half a block before that. And it sounded like one guy fed deer, the other guy was like, and a couple deer were dead like 2 years ago. Right there, I guess. Nobody was ever arrested for it. And so the guy who fed the deer just monitors all the way out to film who would do this. And then last night he showed up at 8:30 at his doorstep. That's what I understand. And the deer shot him. And another woman was shot and sent to HCMC. I think she's still alive. So I talked with a neighbor today who called the police because unfortunately her little girl heard and she has three kids, but only one heard it. And it's terrible. It's this little sleepy, really safe feeling, comfortable neighborhood.
Okay, thank you for allowing us to try to vote. We missed the vote, but but there are like 20 more
minutes. Nice
walk. And we told the sergeants that we just wanted to be notified for the final vote. But I should say that Senator Newman and I are both on the Capital Investment Committee, which is meeting. Are they still
meeting? I think it's at the college chair.
Oh, now it's at the college chair. So we might have to go to bonding committee at some point. But so
let's wrap it up.
There. Yeah, we'll try to move this as quickly as possible. So Representative Sanders has an amendment that we can distribute now.
Oh, yes, that one. Okay. Got that one.
Representative Sanders.
Madam Chair, spoke with the Secretary of State's office yesterday, I think it was on this. From my understanding, we are just adding consistency to statute in ways that we can accept absentee ballot applications, including electronic email and fax, which I think we inadvertently omitted last session in our bill language.
We admitted it. We omitted it.
Correct.
I mean, we did not add it.
We did not add it in. We did not. It was not in the language, from what I understand. And we need to add that in to be consistent in statute. But Ms. Fraser could add to that if we need to.
Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The absentee language previously did not specify ways that applications could be submitted. So the language prior to the law changing last week just said an application may be submitted to the county auditor. And so it did not say in person or by mail. So in the process of adding more specificity, we left out electronic fax and email. And when we looked at records from the 2012 election, there were 8,200 people who submitted their absentee ballot application by fax, and over 10,000 people who submitted their absentee ballot application by email.
So, were you done?
Yes, ma'am.
So, Ms. Fraser, this is clarification that your office may accept absentee ballot application by fax or by email?
Yes, Madam Chair, that the local election officials may do so as they have for previous elections.
Any other discussion on the Sanders Amendment? Representative Sanders moves the A14-1214 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. So then we'll go to the Newman language, or the Senator Newman, the A11 amendment. Does everybody have it? Senator Newman, if you'll let me, I'll just give the House a bit of background on how this came about, or what led us to this point. So, members, if you remember, the Senate was scheduled to pass to hear on the floor the online voter registration bill last Monday. Our respective caucuses discussed it in caucus, and then we came out of caucus and found that learned that the court had ruled on the online voter registration bill. So because of that that ruling, two things happened, well, a lot of things happened, but two main things. First, the Senate decided to allow members of the minority party a day to review the court order. Senator Newman requested that, and after thinking about that, I thought that was reasonable. And then as a result, we took the bill up on Tuesday, and my original idea was that we would allow the bill to be amended and discussed and on the floor of the Senate and go to conference committee. But because a provision in the court order said that we needed to the legislature needed to enact online voter registration, by midnight, or the Secretary of State would have to turn that tool off. I made the decision in consultation with others that it would be wise for us to pass the House version of the bill so that it could become law pretty quickly, later that day or that next day or whatever it was. And at that time, I told both Senator Newman and Senator Kiffmeyer, who had concerns that the security provision in the bill in the Senate wasn't sufficient enough, that we would continue, I was willing to continue to work on other security-related questions in other bills that were moving forward. So we thought that this bill would be an avenue to do that, and that's sort of what brings us to this point here today.
Madam Chair, thank you for that explanation and members of the conference committee. I think that if the court order had not come out when it did, what we would in all likelihood have in the side-by-side would be the Senate language regarding website security, and that did not make it into the bill. Well, sometimes timing is everything, and that was a pretty unusual circumstance that it came out, the court order, that is, just as we are about ready to take this bill from the Senate floor. In addition to the Senate language, then, I was in negotiations with the chair regarding some additional security issues, and specifically that would be the audit that is indicated in my A11 amendment, and the certification that the audit has been completed and is accurate and signed by the Secretary of State and the Secretary of State's office, and the other expert that would be doing the audit. It could be an outside expert, or it could be minute. And then finally, I'm asking that the results of the audit be sent to the ranking members of this committee, the Elections Committee in the House and the Senate, and that it be given to the legislative auditor. Specifically with respect to the legislative auditor, I suggested that because I know that Mr. Nobles is currently involved in doing some investigation regarding data breaches. And I won't go through the data breaches, although if you wish, I can show you, but there have been a significant number of data breaches in the state of Minnesota in the last couple of years. I have also, I would tell you, I have requested and received from the Secretary of State's office, pursuant to a data request, a number of documents regarding the online voter registration system. Between myself and my staff, have gone through them. And there were a significant amount of documents that were provided to us. And specifically what I was looking for was information regarding the security of the system. And I will represent to you, and I can show you what I have, but I will represent to you that there isn't a whole lot in there. I just finally came to the conclusion that, you know, number one, our private data is really important to us, and I think the state of Minnesota has had some troubles in that respect. I also think that as we move forward with online voter registration, a system which, incidentally, I want you to understand, I do support, this is something I'm in favor of. But as we move forward with it, I really do think that we should be taking whatever steps that we possibly can to make sure that the people who are registering online are, in fact, who they say they are. Just an integrity issue. So I had proposed the A11 amendment to address some of those issues. And in a nutshell, I think it would be a very good idea for the voters of the state of Minnesota to get some eyes on this website security and the security of the system other than the Secretary of State's office, and to give us a report as to whether or not this website and the system that has been delivered or develop and implement is doing what we want it to do. And to date, we simply don't have that information. So that's the purpose of the A11. I am in no way trying to slow down online voter registration because, again, it is something that I support. But I think the idea of security in that system is very, very important to the voters in Minnesota, particularly in light of the fact that I don't think anybody can suggest that we haven't had problems in some other areas, and I don't know that one agent, I'm not blaming people, I'm just saying that this is something that we should be looking at. So that's the purpose of the amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Winkler.
While the senators were trying to vote, took the opportunity to discuss this a little bit with the Secretary of State's office and amongst us, and I think we generally think this is a good idea. There are a few language tweaks that I would suggest in consultation with the Secretary of State's office, and maybe Beth can come up and explain what those would be, but it wouldn't really change the substance very much. It would just, I think, make it a little bit more workable. And so I think if we made those changes, we would be supportive of adopting this amendment.
Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The first change would be on 1.17 and changing the word system to the word website to make clear that we're talking about the website referred to on 1.13. Otherwise, we're fine with that paragraph. The next change would be on 1.20. And it would be to change the word audit at the end, the second to last word, to review. In discussions with Minute, they have said that an annual security audit is not conducted. That just is not done. It would be normal to do a review, but that an audit to NIST standards is not done on an annual basis. We also, in consultation with them, would recommend on 1.22 deleting the language about having the chief information officer or other security expert sign the certification. We're happy to have the Secretary of State certify that adequate security measures are in place, but so we would recommend deleting and the chief information officer or other security expert.
And Ms. Frazier, could you just clarify that because Minute doesn't do that or why?
Madam Chair, that's my understanding is that Minute does not certify things like that. And while they're willing to consult with us on the review, I don't think that they would want to certify. Another recommendation is on 1.23 to place the period after the word place and strike the language and that the system is fully secure. Our understanding is that computer experts would never certify that something is fully secure because there's always some sort of vulnerability.
What about Ms. Frazier on 1.13? The reference to the website being fully secure, is that? I said to Senator Newman earlier, I don't know what fully secure means, but
right.
I'm also not a technology person.
Right. Right. Madam Chair, we're more concerned about having somebody certify that the system is fully secure. I mean, I guess I'm not sure what fully secure means, and we would probably prefer to have the word fully stricken on 1.13 as well. The other two changes that we would suggest are on 1.24, changing the word audit to review, as well as on 1.26, changing the word audit to review.
Senator Hoffman.
Did you also, I miss, is 1.21 the word audit in there? Would that also be the review?
Oh, yes, that's right.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Winkler?
My suggestion would, I mean, there obviously would be conforming changes throughout the rest of the A11, but I thought if we could agree, and conceptually with those changes, we could direct staff to make the corrections in the form of an amendment, and we could approve that.
And Ms. Fraser, will you just talk in theory about the difference, like what are we not getting since you're reporting the results to the committees? What would the difference be that we would get in an audit versus a review? In terms of like what Senator Newman is looking for, I believe, is that that things are secure. So is there a real substantial difference in calling it a review or an audit, in your opinion?
Madam Chair and members, my understanding is that a audit is a large-scale venture and usually costs closer to $100,000, and that a review is often done on a regular basis and can be done much less expensively. And
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
Although audit is not a defined term in this bill, or I don't believe in Minnesota state law, there are national standards for audits that NIST, which is the National Institute on Something Technology, has put out. Security technology, perhaps. And that, you know, doing an audit to their standards is a very large-scale venture. We could ask somebody from Minute to come and talk about the differences. But, I mean, in consultation with them, as we've looked at these amendments over the past months, their recommendation has been that we do a review, that's would be more typical.
Senator Newman?
I'll try and go through each of them. I'll have to ask Ms. Fraser questions as I go. But first of all, on line 1.17, desire to change the word from system to website. I could be wrong, but I think that there's more involved in online voter registration in terms of it being a system, a method of registering, as opposed to just a website. And I am looking for assurances that not only the website is secure and accurate, but that the system itself is working. And so for that reason, unless, you know, I can be shown that I am incorrect in my assumption that we are dealing with an online voter registration system, then I would oppose the change of that language. Insofar as the language of going from a review to an audit, I will confess I do not know the difference or the legal definition. An audit sounds to me like it is something that would be more thorough than a review. I'm not too sure what Ms. Fraser was talking about, but in the data that I received from the Secretary of State's office, I did find information where an online security firm by the name of Vericode had contacted the Secretary of State's office and indicated that they were under state contract for $2,000 per application, and that a final report for an audit was last done in 2008, and that they do audit assessments as part of their work. So I guess I'm not hung up on the terminology. I'm simply saying a review does not sound to me to be adequate to accomplish what I am trying to accomplish. The aspect of whether someone from Minute, the chief information officer, or another security officer signs off on a certificate or not, all I'm looking for there is some kind of written assurance that the people who have conducted the audit have done so in proper fashion and certify. And I think to certify a document is a pretty normal procedure. Now, we could call it something other than certification if you would like. For instance, in fiscal notes, what is the phrase? It's certified as to content and accuracy or whatever that term is in our fiscal notes. That kind of language would be fine. But to represent to us that a state agency doesn't do something, I would beg to differ. I think if we ask them, if we tell them, that you have to attest to the fact that this document is accurate, I think that they must comply. I think that was the sum of the changes. So, maybe we can find some language in between, but those would be my initial thoughts.
Representative
Bernardi.
Ms. Frazier, so as I understand, an audit is, could cost $100,000 more, less, whatever. A review is much smaller cost. Is that so? There's a fiscal impact to this language that we're trying to work on to.
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and just to clarify, we did work with Veracode, and we've provided the information to Senator Newman several times that we worked with Veracode, which is a nationally renowned security technology company, prior to the launch of the online voter registration. We worked with Minute, and we made all of the changes that they suggested, and it has been tested and was found to meet the standards. And so I just want to, on the record, say that the system was tested before it was launched by an independent company.
And Ms. Frazier, to work with Veracode again, to have them do either a review or an audit, as you just stated, if they're already telling you that the system is secure then because of the changes you've implemented, is that something that you foresee you would be able to do? Or do you have, I guess another way to put it is, do you have an ongoing contract with this security company to verify that, or to continually monitor the security of the system?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that there is a state contract with them and that we can purchase their services or contract with them under that state contract. And we're happy to do that. And what we understand, perhaps we misunderstood what Senator Newman was intending by his amendment. If we can satisfy the requirements by contracting with Veracode on an annual basis to do a review, we would be fine with that. We understood this to mean something much more entailed and much more expensive.
Ms. Frazier, the language on 19 and 20 says the Secretary of State must work with the Chief Information Officer or another security expert to annually audit the security of the system. So what I didn't know this before, but what I just gathered from you is that you're already working with Veracode and maybe they're already doing this for you. So if you just could report those results to us as outlined in the legislation, it seems like that might meet Senator Newman's concerns, perhaps, with Senator Newman?
Madam Chair, the information, I'm looking at a email string between Secretary of State's office and Minute and Veracode, and nowhere in these emails do they talk about a review. They talk about an audit, and there was some security assessments done when the online voter registration system was brought up. And again, I'm trying to read between the lines here, but it doesn't appear that while some security assessments were initiated and completed, not all of them were, at least from what I can see from this document. So what I'm looking for is the type of an audit that is referenced in here by Minute and by Veracode, and they aren't talking about $100,000 to people. They're talking about like a $2,000 fee. So we could call it an audit, or we could call it a security assessment, maybe. But to just call it a review without any attestation that it's accurate, I don't think fills the bill.
And so, Ms. Frazier, will you, since not everybody has the documents that Senator Newman's using, will you maybe give us some history about the contract you have with Barrick Code and your understanding of whether they could do an annual security assessment and whether they're already under contract? I didn't get from your testimony, you had them under contract. Are they still under contract with your office to do some of the security work?
Madam Chair, they're not still, they have a contract with the state. So basically they're on call to state agencies and our office as we need them. And so we did contract with them. They did do an assessment of the new tools before they were launched. They identified a few issues that we then resolved before the launch. And we would be happy on an annual basis to work with them to do a similar review. I am not a security expert, so when we got this language, we called up Minute and said, what does this mean? And they were concerned about the word audit.
Ms. Frazier, what about security assessment, as Senator Newman outlined?
Madam Chair, if what he means is contracting with Veracode to do to review our systems, then that's fine.
So, Representative Winkler, how should we do this? Should we direct Ms. Stengel? Do you want to make all the oral amendments to security assessment? And why don't you see if you can catch them, explain where they are, or we could just direct you to change it?
Yeah, because there's three sections of this in this amendment. I might just suggest that we adopt the intention and we can sign the report and verify that the changes were made accurately. Okay. That works for staff.
Okay, so we will do that, but there's still this unresolved issue of the word website versus system, if I'm not mistaken, and a couple other deletions of words. So, Senator Newman, you still would like to use the electronic registration system? If I understood you correctly?
I would, and I think I've already explained why. And it's simply because I believe that online voter registration consists of more than just a website.
And Madam Chair, Representative Newman, I think the only change was on 1.17 to say that all the data throughout the whole system wouldn't be encrypted. It's just that the data transmitted through the website would be encrypted, because I don't think we're prepared to change the entire voter registration system to require it all be encrypted. That's the only modification we were suggesting, on 1.17.
Oh, okay, I misunderstood. I thought we were changing the word system throughout there. If it's just on line 1.17, I don't understand.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
And then I believe the other thing to look at is 1.22, the certification, whether that would be signed by the Chief Information Officer. Ms. Frazier, I think that Senator Newman makes a good point that if you're having Veracode do this security assessment, they could sign off to say that that there are adequate security measures in place. And then I would propose that we strike the language after the word place, and that would be kind of a compromise. So the sentence would read, the security assessment must include a certification signed by the Secretary of State and the Chief Information Officer or other security expert that states that adequate security measures are in place.
With a period.
With a period.
And I would incorporate that in my amendment.
And Madam Chair, my understanding of the report that they gave us last time was they identified issues as high risk, medium risk, low risk, and best practices, and give you an overall score, and a score of 90 or better is considered good. And so I know that they will identify security risks, and that last time we then corrected all of the security risks. And that we achieved a score of better than 90, which is what they consider good. So I don't know whether they will, in addition to giving us a score and identifying security risk, also sign something that says security is sufficient.
Well, Ms. Fraser, I think that it says that states that adequate security measures are in place. So in your explanation, that I think that would work. I mean, whether they actually will sign it or not, if that becomes to be a problem, you can come and let us know later. But I'm comfortable at least that we ask you to have them sign a security audit. I think that that's fair.
And Madam Chair, I speak for myself, but I think it's, you know, we're saying it can be a security expert or the CIO, so we are putting the burden potentially on Minute. And I know that if we're asking them to do something they are uncomfortable doing, they can come and talk to us about it.
Okay, so council will incorporate those changes into the Winkler Amendment.
Can I go over them just to make sure I have them all?
No.
Yeah, I just met Bernardi.
Yeah, I mean, another approach to this would be to, because we don't have the information, if that's something that Minute actually will sign off on or if that's something they do, it could be that as of for right now, we have the Secretary of State, who is responsible for that, be the person that signs it off, and then next year come back and get that clarification and hand that in. That's another option.
Yeah, with all due respect, I would prefer, I want to see the Secretary of State and the other set of eyes on the system, both of them telling us that they have done as much as they can to make this site secure. And I come back to what the chair is saying, that the system is fully secure. I don't know if we could really ask anybody to make that statement in today's age, because we know for a fact that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no disagreement with striking that language. But as to keeping both security experts in play here, I think it's a good idea. It's sort of signing, like taking, you need two signatures to negotiate a check. I don't see any problem with that. I really don't. It's just a checks and balances thing.
Representative Bernardi.
Ms. Fraser, I have a question about this. So when you talked with Minute, two questions. One is, what currently is signed off? Right now, the contract you have with Veracode, they don't actually sign something off. So this isn't their current practice to sign off that states that adequate security measures are in place. That's not standard practice currently, I'm guessing, as I understand. And then Minute said that that's not something that they do. And my second question, incorporated with Minute, was that because they don't say fully secure, and do you think that Minute would actually say that they would sign off with something that says that adequate security measures are in place? I'm trying to find out what current practices are, and was a concern over security measures or fully secure?
Ms. Frieder.
Madam Chair, Representative Bernardi, my understanding is that they were not necessarily comfortable with either part, even if the language about it being fully secure was stricken, that they were not looking at, especially with a zero fiscal note. I mean, I think especially without incurring additional costs, they were not prepared to sign a certification. So, I mean, we can call them and, find out additional information based upon this discussion.
Just to give you an idea of what Ms. Fraser and I are talking about, and I have the advantage of having a photocopy of this email string, but just for instance, one of the things is that the Minute put us, I assume, Secretary of State's office, in contact with Veracode, and Veracode ran this security assessment on two different occasions. We chose the highest standards to meet, which was a score of 90 or better. I think that's what Ms. Fraser was talking about. On the first run, they made some assessments. On the second run, they made some different assessments. And then they went on to make some recommendations as to vulnerabilities regarding the website. and laid out some of the flaws. And what I am suggesting is that there would be absolutely nothing wrong with the Secretary of State's office and Veracode per minute signing a document that what they have laid out is accurate. That's all I'm asking for. And if frankly, if we ask that per minute, that they have made a security assessment and this is what our findings were, and ask them to sign off on it, similar to what they do on a fiscal note, I think we have every right in the world to ask a state agency to do that. And if Veracode doesn't want to do it, well, then maybe we find a different security agency.
Madam Chair, I think I have maybe an alternative compromise idea. And that would be that I'll just read it as the language would read. This is starting on 1.21. The assessment must include a certification signed by the Secretary of State that states that adequate security measures are in place and signed by the Chief Information Officer that the assessment is accurate.
Representative Winkler incorporates that change into his changes, his previously made changes on the new amendment.
We might need this read back.
Ms. Stengel?
I have one other question that Ms. Fraser brought up on line 1.13. There was some mention about whether the word fully should remain there or not. Striking fully on line 1.13. Just saying must be secure.
Must be secure. Yep.
Okay. Madam Chair, I can go over what I have and the committee can correct me where I'm wrong. On line 1.13, strike fully. On line 1.17, delete system and insert website. On line 1.20, delete audit and insert assess. Line 1.20, delete audit and insert assess. So it would say annually assess the security of the system. On line 1.21, delete audit and insert security assessment. Line 1.22, delete and the chief information officer or other security expert. On line 1.23, delete and that the system is fully secure. And there we would insert and signed by the chief information officer or other security expert that the assessment is accurate. On line 1.24, delete audit and insert security assessment. On line 1.26, delete audit and insert security assessment. And the same changes would be made in the other two sections.
Madam Chair, that's my motion.
Great. On the Winkler motion, to incorporate those changes into the Newman Amendment, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. And then we need to adopt the Newman Amendment.
Madam Chair, can I interject one more thing? Mr. Gehring pointed out that there was just a typo on line 2.7. It refers to a voter registration application, and this is the absentee ballot section. So on line 2.7, we should delete registration applications and insert. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. 2.7, strike voter registration and insert absentee ballot, because we are talking about absentee ballot applications here. And on line 2.34, make the same change by deleting voter registration and inserting absentee ballot. And that's was Senator Newman's intent, I'm sure, because that's what we're talking about in those sections, but it was my mistake in not being a pasting.
So, Senator Newman incorporates those changes into the A11 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. And the amendment is adopted. So now we have the, when you're ready.
already, Senator Newman, the A-12 amendment before us?
A-12 amendment is an amendment that Senator Kittmeyer has requested that we bring forward, and the principal thing that she is worried about, as I understand it, is the ability to intercept that I will candidly admit I don't know how that might work, but she believes that it is possible to intercept via wireless transmission, private data, when it comes to registering with the system. And she's very, very concerned about that. And that is the purpose of that. I think that is help me if you could, Madam Chair, I think that is really the sum and substance. There was something about placing a statement.
Yeah, it's on 1.16 and on the other areas. And Senator Newman, if I could add, Senator Kiffmeyer explained to me that she was concerned about a scenario where people could have iPads at a place like, I think she used the state fair, maybe I suggested that, have iPads at the state fair where people would register to vote online, that people could then capture the data that a person is entering onto that iPad or onto a computer and still submit the electronic registration, but then the other entity that was doing the voter registration could capture the keystroke data and use that data for other purposes. I don't know if she spoke to you about this, Ms. Frazier, but it seemed to make sense to me that this is, I don't know about putting it on your website necessarily, but if I didn't really understand what it meant, I said to her, I'm not sure that putting that prominently on your website, if the public will really know what that, no individual shall use any device language, if you had to put that on the website, I don't know if the public would understand what that means, really, since I didn't. Clearly, but Senator Newman?
Does anybody here have tech knowledge that would be able to tell us whether it is possible to do this? From a technology standpoint, to intercept and capture the information from these keystrokes? I candidly don't know. I can tell you Senator Kiffmeyer is convinced it can be done.
Madam Chair, what I would point out is that there is no prohibition against photocopying paper applications. So you're setting a different standard for electronic applications that you don't have for paper applications. And I'm not saying that that is a good practice for paper applications, but there's no prohibition for paper.
That would be true, Madam Chair, but I would say that if, from a technology standpoint, it's possible to capture this information. Most definitely, it would be done without the knowledge of the voter that is registered. I suppose it's possible to get your hands on the paper and photocopy it also, but definitely, if this encryption or this capturing information via keystrokes, the voter who is registered certainly won't know what's going on.
Representative Winkler?
Well, my question is why this wouldn't already be a violation of law. But, I'm kind of a little far afield of getting the knowledge that we would need to adequately address this issue in this conference committee outside of the normal committee process.
Ms. Stengel or Mr. Gearing, do you have any information to know whether it's already prohibited by law to intercept data that someone is submitting to a website, to a state website?
Madam Chair, there are several sections of law. I'm trying to see if I have the list with me. somewhere in the latter part of statutes that are computer crimes, and that has to do with taking data from a computer, computer hacking, all those sorts of things are already a crime in the state. So it's possible that this data intercept is already covered by other criminal statutes, but that not really being my area of expertise, I can't tell you if what this amendment does exactly aligns with what's already in criminal law, but I know there are some computer crime protections already in place.
Could we,
Senator Newman?
Could we maybe simply indicate that the information that is being accumulated for purposes of registration is non-public or private or whatever? I'm not into data privacy.
No.
Really?
I don't think
it
is.
That's not,
but
that's not private data.
No,
it's not.
I'm just,
it's already not.
So if it's under this bill, if it's already not private data,
Senator Newman, I mean, I think if the intention is that you're not supposed to misuse the online registration system or be, I mean, we don't even have a criminal provision attached to this. It's just simply a statement of law. I guess it would be a misdemeanor potentially if it was subject to any kind of penalty. I just am not comfortable jumping into this without having a lot more knowledge base to do it. And I think what we're talking about is largely covered by your amendment, which is the security of the system.
Well, then, maybe what I would suggest is, you know, that because candidly I'm a little unsure of this also, maybe this would be a good topic of discussion in the next session as to whether or not, number one, is it possible to accomplish, and I don't know the answer to that, and if it is, then we could think in terms of criminalizing it. Members of the committee would be willing to do that.
And Ms. Fraser, if in the meantime your office, I would assume that there's something in place, as we discussed, that would prohibit someone from capturing data when someone, if someone registers on another device, another person's device, from capturing that data to use it for their own organizational purposes. But if you could get back to us as the committee, two committees, to if you find that to be the case, or any instances where other states have covered this security question, it would be helpful.
Sure, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to do
and
that.
Make sure you let Senator Kistler know too, obviously.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Newman. Are there any other amendments? Any other discussion on Senate File 2390? Anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on the overall conference report? Are there any sections I didn't read out? Okay.
I just want to make sure that when you wrap this up, that so we don't have to come back and sign anything that we have. We have the authority to staff to be able to do that.
So, Representative Bernardi moves the, well, first moves the conference committee. Okay, so then Representative Bernardi and I would ask staff that, or does it have to be a motion? We direct staff to prepare the conference committee report and make any technical changes that we discuss or are supposed to, and then Ms. Stengel or Mr. Gearing, do you have an idea of the timing about how long it will take or when we could look for the report to sign?
Madam Chair, and every advisor's office is aware that you expect this to be done quickly, so I know John is around tonight and can do it tonight yet. I don't know exactly how many hours it will take. But
I don't know if we're in that big of a rush, but okay.
Madam Chair, we could certainly have it by first thing tomorrow morning.
Maybe
so
you
wouldn't have to wait around.
Good.
We're going sunny die on Friday, right, Madam Chair?
Sure.
But there's no reason to meet again.
There's no reason, though, for the conference committee to meet. Just to be clear, we'll just round robin the report and have everybody sign it. So if there's nothing else, we will adjourn.